Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Got texts, got voicemails, you got an opinion, we want to hear it, so hit us up at 331-979-1369. Our episode today is sponsored by Hotels.com, Untuck It, and Grip Six Belts. Matt, happy Thursday to you. Watching all of these combine videos on Twitter has been a whole lot of fun. People also posting a lot of workouts from different guys, and you know, I'm not going to buy into the hype of NBA Combine and any of that, but I find it overwhelmingly funny how many people are all of a sudden becoming really high on players just because of a few workouts. But how you doing today on this Thursday?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Shout out to the good guy on Twitter who tweeted at us saying, we want Reddish. I've been saying it, quote tweeting this video from NBA analyst for ESPN, Mike Schmitz, who has a video of Cam Reddish yesterday on a court. Here is what Mike Schmidt said. Cam Reddish, clearly the most naturally gifted player to take the floor today. Tantalizing at 6'8 with a smooth jumper. Shoots such an easy ball. Nearly 38,000 likes and nearly 8,000 retweets from just yesterday. And cool. He's sinking threes and dunking in an empty gym. I guess that's the hype of combine kind of activity that we have to deal with and have people talk us into this person being the right pick or that person being the right pick. But before we get to Cam Reddish, who is going to be our primary focus today as far as potential Bulls picks at 7, we got a couple of house cleaning bits of news, including one from the Jimmy Butler saga earlier this week.
Turns out that Jimmy Butler and Jim Boylan did not have dinner together, at least as far as what they're saying, that they did not have dinner together. So this came from Casey Johnson, and he just said that they happened to be dining at the same place at the same time, and old friends kind of ran into each other, and that's where the photo was snapped. One was coming into the restaurant, the other one was leaving, and so that was about it. The thing that I had mentioned to you, Matt, yesterday is, well, of course, they're going to have to block this. Even if Jim Boylan and Jimmy Butler did have dinner together, they can't come out and publicly show this because I was telling you, it probably violates NBA's tampering rules. You can't be having dinner together.
Not probably, definitely.
And you can't be having dinner together with coaches of other teams and somebody who's about to be a free agent while the NBA season's still going on. So that, I think, whether or not they did or did not have dinner together, I think that was part of the reason why they brought this up, because they don't want to get hammered with tampering violations. So that was just my thought, whether or not they had dinner together. Well, that I think will just remain a mystery.
Yeah. And there was an added detail from Casey Johnson in his mailbag for the Tribune this morning, which had some good Q&A stuff in it per usual, but he addressed that situation and said that it was actually Jim Boylan having dinner with his new assistant coach, Chris Fleming. Those two were having dinner and happened to be at the same restaurant as Jimmy and his crew. And actually, I saw on Jimmy's Instagram story the other day when this was going on that he and some of his buddies were hanging out in what looked like a restaurant that, you know, I didn't recognize it. Apparently, it was some, you know, some restaurant in Westtown. But so like that story checks out. Jimmy was not at dinner with Jim Boylan. Jimmy was at dinner with some of his buddies. And then I guess by happenstance, coincidence, Jim Boylan and Chris Fleming had dinner at the same spot. So Jim and Jimmy just exchanged a quick hello. So turned out to be nothing, which, you know, again, I didn't think it was much of anything when we first heard about this and saw that that picture that somebody snapped, just based on the sheer unlikelihood of the Bulls actually going after Jimmy this summer, just because it makes no sense on any level. Or mailbag yesterday, one of our callers left us a voicemail asking, like, you know, that hypothetical, if the 2 years from now the Bulls have only reached as far as the 8th seed, would you go back in time if you could and undo the Jimmy trade? Which just goes to show you that there's still a large part of this fan base who is not convinced that trading that guy was the right move.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know if those people are still on board with or have slowly become on board with the rebuild in itself, or they're still sticking with the idea that angry because they traded Jimmy. I'm curious about that. So if anybody's listening to this show and you're still angry about the Jimmy Butler trade and still not on board at all with a rebuild, I'd like to hear kind of where your thoughts in your head is at as a Bulls fan after 2 years.
I got clapped at hard yesterday for putting a piece of news in context, including our pal Sylvie from ESPN 1000, who said that he wants to come back on the pod sometime soon to talk about this because he was not happy with me. But so here it is. Jonathan Givony of DraftExpress / ESPN said yesterday, here's his tweet, from a source, the NBA Global Camp has been canceled due to logistical issues with the venue in Monaco, as well as other concerns. Unfortunate news for the NBA's official international combine. Plenty of people had already booked travel, including players that were invited to attend. So I, when I saw that news, thought back to the headline that Bulls, you know, that Bulls fans were going crazy about when this same global camp happened last year and the Bulls were the only among 30 teams to not send a representative or scout. And I still remember that the way that ESPN originally reported this, their reasoning was that the Chicago Bulls were the only team in the league who did not want to pay the fee to attend said event. The Bulls later came out and refuted that report and said it was not about the fee to attend, but that they had gotten word from their people that it was a hastily organized, poorly organized event that was not worth their time. Now, I still thought that regardless of whether or not that was true, it was still a very bad look to be the only team in the league to not go. Because it just looks like either you're lazy or you're cheap or you're both. If you're the only team to not go. So I prefaced my tweet with that, but said, at least this does legitimize what we heard from the Bulls when they refuted that ESPN report saying it wasn't about the fee to attend the event. It was about the fact that it was poorly organized. And here we go, fast forward a year to present day, and this same event that the Bulls didn't attend for that reason was canceled because of logistical issues. So that's all I was saying. And people blew up and be like, oh, Garpax defender, here we go. And I was just laughing to myself all day yesterday. I was just highlighting a new piece of context for something that Bulls fans were really ticked off about last year.
Just looking over the attendance of the 2018 NBA Global Camp and the players that were invited, there isn't a single player on this list that I have any idea who they are. Besides, actually, there's one. Mature Maker, just because he's Thon Maker's brother. That's the only person on this list I have any idea who they are.
And yeah, so. But you know, as the casual Bulls fan would probably see that news a year ago and think, how are they the only team not going and scouting all this international talent, thinking that they were missing out on, you know, going to watch like Luka or, you know, some of the other, like, you know, most highly touted international prospects when, as you said, Jordan, go back and look at the list. Because I did the same thing. I went back to be like, all right, now who was at this in 2018? And did the Bulls really miss out on scouting anybody that they could have seriously considered taking, especially knowing that the Bulls were at 7 last year, didn't have a second round pick last year. So let's take all that into account. And I looked at the list just like you. I was like, yeah, no, there nobody went to this. And yet still outrage among the fan base. But I'm with you. I still thought that they should have gone just because it was a bad look, PR-wise, to be the only team that didn't send a rep to go check that out. It's just a bad look, and it feeds into the narrative that Bulls fans are so quick to bring up, that this team is cheap and that the front office is not good at their jobs. But it's one of those examples of me getting frustrated when the, you know, torches and pitchforks part of this fan base that all they do is scream bloody murder, fire guard packs into the, you know, Black Chicago Night, that any little piece of anything that they can use to attack the front office, they do so, even when it's something like this where, actually, if you look at realistically what happened last year and who was at that event, other than the fact that it was a bad look PR-wise to be the only team not to go, the Bulls didn't miss out on anything.
It just brings me back to the idea that the Bulls are confident and they believe in their international scouting. They believe in Ivaka Dukin as their main international scout. So they probably feel vindicated after seeing that the global camp will be no longer at 2019.
And it's one of those examples of the front office being not, you know, proven right maybe doesn't necessarily sound right, and I, you know, getting myself in trouble as a Garpax defender here, but at least proven to not be wrong about something that they were immediately and harshly grilled for. And I'm not saying that this one piece of new context and evidence of the Bulls front office not being totally incompetent is enough to validate all of a sudden saying, I'm good. I'm good with these people running this team. No, everybody that listens to this podcast regularly knows that you and I would both like to see some turnover, finally. I think, you know, we're both ready to be done with this experiment, with this current regime. But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to point out certain examples of the fan base blowing something completely out of proportion based on the actual facts of what happened.
I was pissed off that they didn't go, that they were the only team that didn't go, but now that we see it in 2019,
I was only pissed off because it was a bad look.
Yeah, that's where I was too, and I think a lot of other fans were too.
As you were saying, I didn't believe that they were missing out on real, you know, like actual talent by not going, because as you said, go look at the list of players that were there. Did the Bulls miss out on adding a very important piece of their rebuilding roster by not attending that event last year? No. So that, you know, I wasn't upset about it in that regard. I was just upset because I knew it would be a bad look.
Cameron Reddish. Let's talk about him, because this has been an interesting player.
I mean, look, there's a lot to like about Cam Reddish in the good parts of Cam Reddish that we saw at Duke last season, even though it was kind of an up and down one and done year for him. Obviously, you like his size, not just, you know, his 6'8" height, but the 7'1" wingspan, and the fact that for a guy his size, he handles the ball incredibly well. He's got a really nice spin move that he uses in a variety of ways. Sometimes he uses it as the first move that leads into like a step back or a mid-range, and sometimes he uses it to attack all the way to the basket, and he's pretty strong finishing around the rim for the most part when he uses that spin move. Also can knock down threes, you know, off the dribble going around screens. He can knock down catch-and-shoot threes, and, you know, there's a lot to like offensively about his game. But those are the good moments, and then you realize that for every one of those moments, there was, you know, a couple of plays where it was not pretty. And for every shot that he knocked down, let's go back and remember that this kid shot 35.6% from the field. Not from three-point range, from the field. How do you shoot 35% from the field and get talked about as like a potential top five pick in the NBA draft? To me, it's baffling. And The other thing, and I noted this in a tweet yesterday when people were going crazy on that Cam Reddish video of him just like shooting threes and dunking in an empty gym. Taking a closer look at Reddish's shot and more specifically his release, he's got a really low release point on his shot. And I'm not saying that that will immediately eliminate him from potentially being an effective shooter in the NBA, but it's certainly not great. You want players, especially a player like Reddish who has that size and has that reach, to ideally have a shot that you can still get a clean look when your shot is contested, especially if you're going to be a specialized perimeter shooter kind of player, or at least have that as an important element to your game. Just go back and watch that video from that ESPN dude Mike Schmitz that everybody's retweeting and liking right now, and watch Cam Reddish shoot those threes. His release point is very low, and I don't like that.
He was clutch in moments for Duke where I feel like a guy that is third wheeling on a team with two superstars like RJ Barrett or Zion Williamson don't normally get those types of opportunities. And I think when Cameron Reddish had those opportunities, he took advantage of them. I had mentioned when we first talked about Cam Reddish that Florida State game stood out to me. That was when Zion Williamson was hurt. Florida State was a top team in the country.
Yeah, and I think that's why people are talking about Reddish the way they are right now, which is that, you know, everyone's saying he's got star power. Don't sleep on this kid. If he slides, he's going to be a steal. But with that comes the understanding that also he's going to take some development, which we know is the focal point of this rebuild for the Bulls right now, at least until 2021, when some of this money comes off their books and maybe Markkanen and Levine have reached and Wendell have reached a point where they are looking like, you know, up and coming contenders, or at least up-and-coming relevant core that somebody else wants to, you know, jump on, a star from free agency. Until then, it's all about internal development, and that's what we've heard repeatedly from members of this organization. So drafting a project player like Cam at least would kind of fit that, you know, that explanation of what we're doing here and building through the draft. But it's not just the, well, we're going to have to build this kid and he's maybe not going to be ready to compete right away. As much as some people, you are all on board Reddish on Twitter right now, are saying this kid's going to be a star right away. I don't see it. I'm not buying that. I think he does have the greatest window, though, like the widest window of floor to ceiling, which is why I don't think people who are saying if people sleep on this kid, the team, and he slides, the team that you know, steals him, are going to get, you know, a hell of a player. That's I'm not doubting the possibility that could be what happens. I'm just saying there's a wider range with Cam than I think some of the other people that you're talking about in that, like, you know, back half of the top 10.
Is free to be able to have the ball a little bit more, be able to freely take more shots and not feel like he's stuck at the three-point line and had to a third fiddle behind two other stars. Maybe that does open up things, or you could take it to the opposite effect. Maybe that concerns a lot of people. So the one thing I want to highlight really quick is the UNC game when Zion Williamson went out. When he busted his shoe open in that first minute of that game back in late February, Cam Reddish actually had his best game of the season after that. He was 10 for 23 from the field, 6 for 11 from 2, 4 for 12 from 3. He had 27 points and 3 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block, and 4 turnovers. Him and RJ Barrett, I believe, combined for 75 points in that game, in that loss. But nonetheless, you see Zion Williamson go out, and all of a sudden Cam Reddish has his highest scoring game of his entire season. That says a little bit to me. That says a little bit to me that allowing Cam Reddish to open up his game and have a little bit more control on the offensive side.
Yeah, that's a fair point to make. And, you know, it's something that people said about Wendell last year when, towards the back end of Duke's regular season, Marvin Bagley had to sit a couple of games. And in those games, Wendell, being the focal point, had monster performances. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with making that argument. And to say, you know, look what Reddish was able to do when the primo guy took a seat when Zion left that game that you talked about. But, you know, I'm not putting a whole lot of stock in that. It's a totally valid argument, and I will see that there is, it's not completely meaningless to point that out. But I mean, Zion and Cam almost had the same number of field goal attempts per game last season. RJ Barrett was the number one. RJ Barrett, and you know he's getting some criticism for that too, especially in that tournament game that Duke lost, where they went away from Zion at the end. But RJ Barrett took 18.5 shots per game last year. Zion Williamson was second at 13.2. Not that far behind Zion was Cam Reddish at 12 even. I mean, we're talking about a guy not getting enough opportunities. And in a 40-minute college basketball game, when he's averaging 29 minutes of those 40 per game, you're getting 12 shots. Yeah, you're the third option, but you're barely the third option behind number two, and you're getting 12 shots. Don't give me an excuse about not getting in a rhythm, not getting in a flow, not getting enough opportunities. The guy got 12 shots
a game. He had his three-point attempts, too, because it seems like he took a lot of threes, and maybe he was the only one that was
7.4 per game.
Over half of his shots were three-pointers, and I think that can be quickly fixed, right? Like, if you're concerned about his field goal percentage, if you're similar to, like, the way that I think about Zach LaVine for a second, when he was trying to take all of those threes early on last season, was actually starting to take more efficient three-pointers. So I wonder if that's going to be something to work on with Cam Reddish. And, like, as soon as he gets to another team, he doesn't feel like he has to just be a three-point threat, that he maybe can do a couple other things. I think you'll see that field goal percentage go up from 35.6%, because that is pretty disgusting.
And that's why, you know, all of this is, you know, in the context of what people are debating right now among this Bulls fan base and whether or not they should, you know, take Cam and feel excited about it if he's there at seven, is that some people are projecting him to be this, you know, stud star NBA player that people are sleeping on. And some people are talking about him in the context of, is he the best choice and maybe the best overall talent to take at seven, where he also, you know, fills a position of not greatest need, because that's, of course, still point guard, but a very important position in today's NBA, and one where after Otto's 2 years are up, you're going to need somebody waiting in the wings to take over. And he could be a good role player on a team that's working towards being relevant. That's where, you know, that's where I think that there's a difference of opinion among Bulls fans right now, is that some people are like, how dare you question Cam? Of course they should take him at seven if he's there. He'd be a steal. He's going to be a star. And some people are saying, like, whoa, pump the brakes. You know, he might be a good role player in the NBA, and he might be a nice piece to add to this young Bulls core right now. But don't tell me that, like, it's insane to question the weaknesses of his game and the parts of his, you know, lone season at Duke that were, you know, somewhat worrisome when you look at the pros and cons of drafting him at seven. That's, you know, I don't think that, you know, he has this huge star potential that people are, like, saying people are just disrespecting Cam Reddish. No. But I also don't think he's, like, you know, that they should completely cast him aside. I think he is one of the people that the Bulls are going to be looking at very closely over the next month. And if they draft him, and, you know, especially if they draft him because Darius Garland and Coby White are both off the board as well as Ja Morant, you know, I could probably talk myself into being okay and borderline excited about adding him to this team. But the context of these people saying, oh my God, the utter disrespect that people are showing Cam Reddish right now. Chill out.
The Bulls taking a swing at him at number seven, should be all the point guards be off the board, I think would not be a bad idea for the Bulls. But let's talk about a trade for a second, because we did mention that the Spurs had talked to Cam Reddish. So let's start there. Let's start with the Spurs, if they're really truly interested in acquiring Cam Reddish and moving up from where they currently are at 19. What would you want from the Spurs, and what would it take for them to move up from the mid-teens in order to get into the top 10 to where the Bulls pick at seven? What do you think it starts with, a conversation like that? Where do you think it starts?
Well, given what the Bulls need, I would guess that the conversation starts with either DeJounte Murray or Derek White, whichever one of those players the Spurs are more willing to part with. And then from there, you can piecemeal the rest. But if I'm the Bulls and I'm trading back my number seven pick, you know, you're hoping that the Spurs would also be willing to, you know, swap theirs so the Bulls can still pick somewhere in the mid to late stages of the first round. But to me, it's all about getting one of those guards. I know, you know, DeJounte Murray had a really disappointing season, got hurt early. I loved what we saw from him last season, you know, like the 17-18 season, I think that kid's going to be special if he could stay healthy. I would love him. But, you know, in his absence, Derek White has showed us some pretty nice things too. So I would be looking for one of those two guys.
Yeah, because you don't think that they're going to trade Patty Mills, right?
I would guess no. I think Pop loves Patty Mills too much.
Patty Mills right now on a contract, $12.4 million set for next year and $13.2 for 2020-2021. But I definitely agree with you. It's got to start with Derek White or DeJounte Murray. And honestly, I would start with DeJounte Murray. In order to get those two picks in DeJounte Murray, what do you have to include?
Maybe a future pick? I don't know.
Really? You think it would take a future pick? I'm just thinking about recent deals. Like, look at the Bulls. The Bulls had to trade two picks in the teens in order to move up, what, five spots? Talking about the Doug McDermott, the Doug McDermott deal a few years ago. Like, we're talking about going from 19 to 7. I get DeJounte Murray's a nice player, but he was hurt for most of this year.
I mean, like, a nice player? Like, I think that's cutting him a little short. Like, before he got hurt, people were talking about him being a star this year because he showed that. Like, he was getting All-NBA votes last two seasons ago.
True. He tore his ACL, though.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I would still say right now that a DeJounte Murray coming off an ACL tear has tremendously more upside based on everything we know and everything we've seen than Chris Dunn. When you're talking about trajectory for a successful, long NBA career, I think DeJounte Murray right now, without question, has more upside than Chris Dunn.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that. I'm just curious, like, what...
The value.
You're right.
Whether or not it would actually cost a future pick. I mean, I just say that because when you look at this Bulls roster right now, you know, are you willing to give up any of these core pieces to get DeJounte Murray? Are you willing to give up Wendell to get DeJounte Murray? I think the Bulls would probably say no to giving up Wendell to get DeJounte Murray. But does Denzel Valentine get you there? No. Does Chandler Hutchison get you there? No. Does Chris Dunn get you there? No. So that's why, to me, I think it's hard to say, well, what would it take? What would the Spurs say yes to give up DeJounte? Because it's like either the Bulls are, you know, in this situation right now where their tradable assets are too valuable to give up for a player like Murray. And then the other pieces are not really all that attractive as trade pieces. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's like it's one or the other in this particular scenario.
All right, well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. Drop us your text, your voicemails, whatever you got for us, 331-979-1369. Thanks to our sponsors today on the show, Hotels.com, Untuck It, and Grip Six Belts. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls, Himalaya, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you are subscribed to Locked On Bulls so you get our shows as soon as they drop. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com